Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello, Ruck listeners, and welcome to Perth. I'm here with Alex Lowe, the rugby correspondent for The Times. I'm Will Kelleher, deputy rugby correspondent from The Times. And the last time you heard me, I was on the way to Perth, and I made it. I'm with Alex. How's it going, Alex?
No, we're good, thank you. We've just come back from the Bowls Club, where England are hosting all their media sessions. They've just named their team for the first test, and you and I were a little bit stiff because we went and did a spin class this morning. And they pushed us pretty hard, didn't they?
I was inspired by the instructor Shano, who kept telling us to stay successful. So we're gonna try and do that with the Times and the Sunday Times, yeah, and the Ruck.
We had to stay successful and believe in ourselves. And then after we discovered that he'd been an international dancer for 17 years and appeared on US TV in Dancing with the Stars or something like that. And
So you think you can dance, yeah.
Which you could sort of tell as he danced up and down on his bike, and we sort of plodded away. When he said, you should be feeling like you're going through mud at the moment, we were like, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. But then, yeah, came back from there, went out to... Well, we got on a Zoom, because the Wallabies, kind of weirdly, are only just arriving into Perth this evening. They've been at their training camp in Queensland all week, which has sort of led to quite a low-key feel to the build-up to this game. I don't think there's been as low a key build-up to an England test that I can remember. It's like, if you can walk around Perth and there's a few flags up, but you kind of wouldn't know it's happening. And a lot of the people we were talking to have said, oh, is there a rugby game on? Oh, I might go. Mm. And they're suddenly desperately advertising tickets. It's felt quite low-key so far. It's ramping up a bit. The Wallabies picked their team, and we had a chat with Dave Rennie by Zoom because they haven't flown over here yet. And then, yeah, we've just been down to see Eddie Jones and Johnny Hill and a couple of the other players to just talk through what's a pretty interesting England team.
Yeah, before we get onto the two teams, we had to actually leg it back to our hotel down the street because there was a retirement do happening at the Bowls Club where England announced their team. So you guys earlier in the week, when I wasn't here, had a few legs of bowling, didn't you? But I've missed out. I might have to go back another day.
Yeah, Ends, I think they're called.
Ends.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, we got a bit of training from Stan, the local bowls hero. It was great fun, actually. It was really good.
Is he the same Stan that is Stan Sport, who is broadcasting the series?
I don't think so. I don't think
like
so.
Dave on our TV at home.
He showed us the ropes. Unfortunately, I lost to Rob Kitson of The Guardian and Chris Foy of The Daily Mail, but we'll arrange a rematch for Brisbane next week.
Stay successful, Alex.
I'm going to keep believing myself. That's what Shane told me.
Yeah,
Shane O.
Right, so you want to hear about the teams. You might have read it on the website, but they have both been announced. And let's start with England. And I think, Alex, you're pitching this as the comebacks and the kids, because we've got Danny Kerr and Billy Vunipola both starting at number 8 and scrum half, not the wrong way around. And then Owen Farrell is not the captain, but he is playing. Courtney Laws has been selected as skipper. And then on the bench, there are three uncapped players: Jack Van Portfleet, Guy Porter, both from Leicester, and then, with an asterisk to his name, the first ever apprentice to be selected in match day 23, we think, is Henry Arundel.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts on England's team to start with?
Well, I really like it. So we should say that Johnny May would have played, but he's still actually in isolation. I think he was affected by COVID, and it's obviously taken him some time to get negative and get through it. So he was unavailable, and Charlie Yules is flying home with a knee injury, so he wasn't available. I really like this team. It also feels to me that as I just stuck it on on Twitter, but it occurred to me that if Eddie Jones had cast his selection out to the public, to a public vote, like Shano had to go through on his dancing TV reality show, I reckon the vote would have come back pretty close to the squad that he selected, because so many people out there, so many of our readers and listeners would have wanted to pick Danny Care for so long. Billy Vunipola, you know, he was in such monstrous form for Saracens by the end of the season that, as I wrote the other week, that even if Alex Donbrandt had been available, I think Billy had earned himself a spot on the plane and starting number eight, because they need that ball carrying force that he brings, especially without Manu. And of course, everyone loves the exciting new kids. I know Eddie Jones is a big fan of Jack Van Portfleet, who is a, you know, uncapped. He didn't even make the Leicester squad for the Premiership final, but Eddie's got designs on him being part of the World Cup squad. And everyone's excited about Henry Arundel. We've seen what he can do in a London Irish jersey in Europe and in the Premiership. He's very, very raw. And as you say, he's still an apprentice. But I like the balance of this team. Johnny Hill is back as well, who missed the Six Nations. Mako's back on the bench. Luke Cowan-Dickie is back. He missed time in the Six Nations. It's a much more balanced team, a much stronger team. And we will really, injuries, assuming no one gets injured, we'll see what Eddie Jones and the England coaches have planned for the Smith-Farrell playmaking partnership. I think that is a fascinating combination, and I really do think it can work. And I know that people get frustrated, the idea that Farrell isn't an Andre Esterhazen. He'll have to defend like him because Karevi is going to be coming straight at him. But England, as we did see flashes against Australia, and the way that England have tried to use Henry Slade with Marcus Smith in trying to create Marcus Smith a little bit more space, slightly wider, often as second receiver. I mean, Eddie Jones has said, captain or not, that Owen Farrell is England's most important player, and I absolutely understand why, and I'm sure we'll go on to talk about the captaincy, because you saw Courtney a few weeks ago towards the end of the season and got a very strong vibe that he was going to lead this team, and we know that Eddie likes the way that he, his sort of softer touch, the way that he brings the team together, and Farrell is obviously a much more abrasive character, competitive character, which you want in your team, but he spent a long time working on his captaincy, and it feels like there's been a shift now.
I think it's the right decision, personally. I think ripping the plaster off, making that big call, and you can kind of see why Eddie has delayed it for this long.
Yeah.
He didn't want to tell us. I think we believe he decided this a while ago, certainly before they flew out to Australia, but didn't want to announce it at the squad announcement a couple of Mondays ago, and has left it to today because he probably didn't want it to dominate all the column inches for a couple of weeks. But personally, I think it's the right decision. I feel like Courtney Laws fits the new attitude of the team a bit better, and him and Ellis Genge have, as you were saying, those soft skills and that empathy, and they're capable of getting the best out of these different characters in the squad. I mean, Eddie wrote himself in his book that he felt the Saracens' core became a little bit toxic, and there was a bit of issue around that. And actually, he's ended up recalling most of them. Only Elliot Daly, who's not here, of that core lot. But the other analogy we could make too is that Eddie, I'm sure, will want is a cricketing analogy, which Eddie loves, of stripping the captaincy off a gun batsman like Joe Root or Alistair Cook in the past has freed them up and allowed them to score runs. And that's kind of what he was talking about when we saw him earlier, was he feels like Owen losing the captaincy will get the best out of him on the field. And actually, we've long thought that Farrell's a captain anyway. He's kind of a leader anyway. He doesn't need the extra responsibilities of all the stuff that he doesn't enjoy that comes with a captaincy, whether that's talking to us or whether that's being the face of the team publicly, or even the stuff about dealing with the referees, which is clearly not his forte. And other elements of actually playing rugby and being the heartbeat of the team really are.
And as Eddie explained that, it took me back to the World Cup in Japan, when Farrell's form was described by Scott Weismantle, who is now in the Wallabies coaching setup, as clunky. And it became a bit of a word for a week. I think it was in the week of the Australia game, actually, the World Cup quarterfinal. And Eddie said that actually that week they'd sat down with Owen and told him to stop focusing so much on trying to be the captain of the team and just focus on getting the best out of himself. And having not really been part of this England team for a year, I mean, in the autumn he missed a game with COVID and then got injured in the second game, and then he missed the whole Six Nations. He's coming back into an environment where they just want to get the best out of him. We've seen that with Saracens. We've seen how effective he's been since he got fit again. He's playing in a different way almost. It's like, and I asked him this after the semi-final, Premiership semi-final, whether all those weeks sitting on in the coach's box had kind of taught him something different about how he wanted to play, whether he was seeing things differently, because he's playing like he's seeing things differently when those opportunities arise. I mean, the Premiership final was a kind of a tactical battle of wills. It wasn't really that much of an open game, but in the Harlequins game, for example, we saw moments from Owen Farrell which we're not used to seeing, and I just think Eddie wants him to just be himself. And again, you referred to Eddie's book. There are a few passages in there that talk about the work that Owen is having to do to develop what Eddie calls soft skills, just the empathy, communication, understanding of the team dynamic, which don't come naturally to him. I'm not saying he's not a great team player, because he's an ultimate team man. He'll put his body on the line for everybody. It's what Eddie Jones calls the soft skills, and when he lists them in his book, you're like, Courtney, just, he has those. He's much more in control of his emotions on the field. Owen plays to the edge, and that can make it harder for him to have a clarity of thought and clarity of communication. And I think they just want him to focus on playing right to the edge.
Yeah, and we'll probably leave the captaincy stuff there, but when you pick up your copy of the Times on Friday morning, then we'll have plenty more words about it, as well as us chatting about it here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The other side of the coin are the Wallabies, and they picked a couple of interesting uncapped players as well. David Parecki is one of them who Premiership rugby fans might have recognised his name, because he was at Saracens for a small stint and then for about 4 years at London Irish as a hooker. He's on his debut at 29, starting at hooker. But then the other guy has got quite a Welsh name, actually, hasn't he? Cadrin Neville.
Yeah.
33 years old. He's the third oldest Wallaby on debut since World War II, and the oldest for 23 years. And when we chatted to Dave Rennie a few hours ago this morning on Zoom, he was saying he's basically picked him because he's a mauler, a brawler,
yeah,
and he's going to try and disrupt the English forwards, which, to my mind, is a massive compliment to England, who have got Johnny Hill, Maro Itoje and Courtney Laws, which on paper looks like a really strong line-out and maul. And so picking this guy who's been in the system for 10 years but not actually got a cap is really interesting. And actually, I thought earlier when we were just chatting about him being picked, back to the 2019 semi-final of the World Cup, where New Zealand kind of out of nowhere spit Scott Barrett a six to combat England's line-out, and it totally blew up in their face. Curry and Underhill took the mickey. England blasted them off the pitch, and I think Steve Hansen ended up hooking Barrett at
half-time, I think.
Yeah, you're right, at half-time. So in terms of a news line from the team, that was Nev getting in there. But
yeah,
what do you think of their team?
Well, to put into context his journey to a debut cap, Dave Rennie highlighted that Neville was first involved with the Wallabies in the same camp that Michael Hooper was called up into when he was uncapped. And Michael Hooper now has 117 Australia caps. and Neville's about to make his debut. The big theme of the Wallabies team announcement was the influence of the Brumbies and of Dan McFarland, who's the Brumbies head coach, who was seconded into the Wallabies, has now joined them full time. There are 12 Brumbies in this Wallaby squad, and the focus is very much on how they played in Super Rugby, which was set piece and mauling dominated. And they were sort of unabashed in saying, this is what we are and this is how we're going to try and take England on, which is so unusual to hear the Wallabies talk about that being the way they want to play. But we're much more used to, I think Checker took it to an extreme by the end, but in that World Cup, they were just committed to running it from everywhere and played it to England's hands, and it was very, very naive rugby. Their focus is to take England on up front and in the line out and in the maul. One of the points that Eddie made, and about as close as he came to mischief making today, where he's been quite low key as well, which is sort of unusual for Eddie and when he's back in Australia, was to point out that they'll have this focus of, you know, of the forwards trying to keep the ball, frankly, but with Nick White and then Quade Cooper, who wants the ball in his hands, at 10, and he was sort of suggesting there might be a bit of a disconnect there, and it might be an area that England can try and exploit. I think he's probably suggesting that Quade might get a bit frustrated if he doesn't get his hands on the ball as much as he would like. But it's you know, it makes it really interesting. England have obviously gone with Courtney at 6 and Johnny Hill and Maro Itoje in the second row, with Ollie Chessam on the bench. They're not short of good maulers themselves. And the set piece will be fascinating. The scrum, England scrum, hasn't been brilliant, I wouldn't say. I think they're stronger now, even without Carl Sinclair. And the Wallabies are missing two tight heads.
Taniela Tupou is the main one, isn't he? I mean, he's been on. Yeah. He's been on the adverts. He's crashing a tea party.
He's in the face of the series over here.
And he's out of the first game because he got a calf injury a couple of weeks ago, didn't he?
Yeah. So they're sort of talking. The Wallabies are talking a tight game. And as we were just discussing with Johnny Hill and Ellis Genge, that they're playing it on an Aussie rules pitch, which had the state of origin on it last weekend and had players slipping and sliding everywhere. I think those forwards are putting in their long studs and hoping the turf holds together. But it's that's how the, you know, after Thursday in Perth, it's sort of shaping up, certainly in the way that the two teams are talking, as a real kind of battle for the gain line and a battle up front. Because England, obviously, we talked about Billy, but they've got Joe Cock and a Singer on one wing and Jack Noel on the other, which is, you know, that's two. It's one kind of real nuggety, combative, abrasive wing, and one powerhouse who, as we all know, if he can stay fit and build up some momentum into his game, could be a real weapon. And I know we've been saying it for 4 years, but he had a great game. I think it was at Cap 2 against the Wallabies in 2018, scored a try. England will be looking to him to kind of come in off Smith and off Farrell and try and bust the gain line.
Him against Marika Korobeti is going to be box office. I mean, it could be a bit of fun, this, couldn't it? I mean, mauling Wallabies against gas England, it's all the wrong way around, really, but it might not actually turn out that way.
I'm sure, and there'll be loads of elements to it. And I'm just excited by the two teams after a kind of a quiet few days. Now we know what the two teams are looking like. I think it's going to be one to tune into on Saturday morning.
So just the word that we started off with, the slightly odd build-up to this, and it has been really low-key, hasn't it? I mean, walking around Perth, not many people... I don't think I've seen one England shirt, for a start.
No.
I mean, it's an expensive trip for lots of people, and post-COVID, Western Australia's only come out of lockdown in March, I think people were saying to us earlier in the week, so it's all been a bit fraught and maybe a bit last minute for people to get over. I think some players' families might be coming now over the next couple of days, but the state of origin was on last weekend. There's not really many banners around town. As you said, the Wallabies have been on the opposite side of the country on a five-hour flight away, only arriving on Friday. So let's hope it kind of kicks into gear a bit, because even Eddie himself is sort of cutting a frustrated figure that he's got no one to sort of spar against. Because you try with Dave Rennie, and he's probably taking quite a pragmatic approach. He doesn't want quotes in the paper. He wants his team to win on the weekend. And he even said earlier look, I think Eddie's like me. It's not about us. Look, we'll let the players do the talking. And he was probably talking for himself there, not for Eddie. But
he definitely was. I mean, this is an Aussie rule state, Western Australia. I think the state of origin, which the England team went to last Sunday and actually took an enormous amount from, not just experiencing the stadium that they're going to compete in as fans, but just the intensity of that game. And I don't know if anyone watched the first two games. It's now 1-1 in the three-match series, but the ferocity that those two teams went at each other was staggering, really. And the England players loved it. But that wasn't even sold out, and that was, I mean, it was 60,000 in a 65,000 stadium. So Australian rugby, they're trying to make an imprint here. And of course, you know, there'll be the World Cup here. There'll be the Lions here first. I don't think there'll be a test match here. I'd be surprised. But the Lions will play here in a couple of years' time. And then the World Cup in 2027. You know, they need to grow rugby's imprint here. And I flew on the non-stop flight from London. Actually, it was a really good way of getting here. And it feels a long way when you step on. But once you arrive, it's a wonderful place to be. You would just like there to be a little bit more fervour around the game. I think we're hearing 45,000, which is still a decent crowd. It just feels low key, and I just hope that now we've got the two teams, both of which are fascinating and exciting in their own way. And we just, as a further aside, we talk about the veterans. I was here in 2010 when England demolished Australia's scrum. They earned two penalty tries, and Selesi Mafu was sin-binned, forcing James Slipper to scrum down on both sides in the space of about 3 minutes. And England still lost the game. And they lost the game because Quade Cooper led them a merry dance, and the Aussies won it 27-17. There are three survivors from that day. Quade Cooper started for the Wallabies, Danny Kerr started for England, and James Slipper is on the bench again, having become one of quite a few, actually, Australian centurions. But he's played over 100 tests for the Wallabies, packing down on both sides. But it's kind of rare that you get a test match that's got three survivors from the last time that this game was played in the city 12 years earlier.
Well, there you go. They're the throwbacks, and now we're going to throw forward and tell you all to read the Times and the Sunday Times over the weekend. We'll probably try and do one of these before the Brisbane test match as well next week, and there'll be a usual ruck early next week as well, which we'll try and chip into. But for now, the sun is setting on Western Australia quite early, really. For us, it's what, 6 o'clock ish, and we need to now start writing stuff up for the newspaper and then celebrate one of our numbers' 40th birthday, which is later on tonight. He will remain nameless, but he was mentioned on a previous pod, the same person who stayed out till 6 o'clock in the morning in Edinburgh. So hopefully we don't have a repeat of that, because we've got quite a lot to do.
And the same person who's missed a flight home and a train home after staying up too late watching the Super Bowl. So anyway, all we can do is promise his employers that he'll at least be on deck to work tomorrow. We'll look after him that much, I promise.
But it's getting a bit chilly outside. We're just sitting outside our hotel, so we'll stick some jumpers on. But for now, that has been a counter-ruck, we'll call it. Al Dimmock's name for these little special ones. And we'll be back in your ears next week and in your newspapers tomorrow. But for now, stay successful, everyone, and keep on spinning.
Keep believing in yourself, guys.